It is time to bring in Brian Ross. It is time for Real News with Brian Ross. Brian joins us on a Thursday morning. Good morning, Brian.
Good morning to you, Marshall.
And how did you survive the storms that came through our area yesterday?
Well, I survived them by heading to New York, where I'm speaking from this morning. But I heard of the great generators kicked in, and the hail came down, and it is spring in northwest corner.
And of course, Prindle Insurance lost a little cupola cover over the entrance to their office yesterday.
Yeah.
That's Barclay can if it's going to happen to somebody, it should happen to an insurance agency, I guess.
Absolutely, they're well situated.
<That's right. laughs>
Exactly.
Well, the nation.
It's been such a beautiful spring weather, and I think that. Also, the great news this week was a verdict that brought justice to so many in this country and brought justice to the family of George Floyd.
I was going to say the nation's side, well, I'll say 99% of the nation's side, a collective sigh of relief when basically the jury came down on all three counts, guilty, guilty, and guilty. And now that we await the sentencing of the former officer.
Exactly. And, you know, it took less than 10 hours. They had to sort through the testimony of 38 witnesses, all those videos, the conflicting medical testimony. And there was never any doubt, it seemed to me, that jury was pretty quick in terms of what they had to decide on all three counts. He faces a maximum of 40 years under the guidelines, the sentencing guidelines in Minnesota. That you are sentenced to the most serious crime, which is the second degree, 40 years. Generally, the guidelines call for a first offender to be sentenced to 12 and a half years. But the prosecutors they've got what they call aggravating facts and circumstances. And they made a point during the trial to bring on to the stand the 9-year-old girl who witnessed it and two teenagers who were minors at the time. And under Minnesota law, a crime committed in front of a minor, in front of a child, is an aggravating circumstance which could add to the amount of time that Derek Chauvin was served behind bars. I think he's looking at decades.
Yeah, I, you know, somebody asked me about that yesterday, and I said the same thing. They said, well, don't they add all the three charges? So I said, no, they take the most serious charge, then they look at what the most serious repercussions for those charges are, and then they act situations that are on top of that, they add to it. And I thought that he would, I said, if I were to guess, I would say a minimum of 30 years, I think, is what they'll probably give him. But you never can tell. But still, the other interesting news that came out after that, the Department of Justice is going to investigate that very same police department.
Absolutely. And there, from my own reporting, I know there have been, you know, one case after another from officers not named Derek Chauvin who have mistreated people of color in the making arrests for jaywalking, for traffic stops, for a variety of minor offenses. They've quite honestly been brutal, a lot of it captured on tape. And this is a provision that the Justice Department used to carry out during the Obama administration. It had mixed success under the former president. That policy was blocked. They stopped doing attempts to look at police departments and seek consent decrees so they would behave better. Attorney General Garland, one of his first acts was to essentially countermand the Trump decision, and he has ordered, essentially following what President Biden, Vice President Harris said, a look to see whether there is a systemic racism in the practices and policies of the Minneapolis Police Department. Long overdue, and let me just say, I don't believe it's the only police department in the country that deserves a very close look.
You know, and when people say, how do the actions of rogue officers and we have rogue personalities in every form of life and every form of work, but when it comes to a police officer where the public really trusts police officer to protect the public, it puts the police in a very bad situation when you have these rogue situations. And I'm just going to point out that once again, the video cam footage was released of police shooting a black teen who was 17 years old. The police came upon this teen who had charged two women with a knife in front of the officers, and one of the officers shot. Now, we have to wait and see what comes up out of this. But once again, let's say the two people that were being attacked with a knife were in a serious situation, and the person was warned to stop, and they didn't stop. All of a sudden, any action by a police officer comes into question. And this is the bad thing about rogue police. It paints all police officers as being horrible. And you know what? We need police, and there are a lot of tons of great police officers out there, and it brings all their actions into question. This is the problem with rogue policing.
Right, and you say rogue policing. I think in Minneapolis, you could call it rogue, but Derek Chauvin, during his 19-year career, had at least 18 complaints from citizens about brutality. No action was taken against him. And I think the question is, how do departments deal with officers who are bad cops? And I think everyone agrees Derek Chauvin was a bad cop. His chief did. The two supervisors above him did. Police unions all agree he was a bad cop. But I think the larger question is, he was allowed to stay on the force despite those complaints. And what was the message sent to Derek Chauvin? I can do this. I can get away with it. You know, he was not bothered, as we saw in that video, with people shouting at him, let go of the guy. He had a kind of nonchalant look. And frankly, the mugshot released after he was taken away in handcuffs and booked at the Hennepin County Jail shows a kind of defiance, I think, in his eyes.
It's a total lack of, there is absolutely no remorse. You can just tell there's no remorse, and I don't even think there's any worry. You're right, that was an amazing, the mugshot is, the eyes tell it all, and there's just, yeah. Those eyes are empty of emotion, absolutely empty of emotion. I want to go on to another story that I think is really interesting, and that is Joe Biden. President Biden has announced a very ambitious plan for the U.S. to have emissions by 2030. It's created a lot of talk and stir on the media already. But even if this were to happen, in the 4 years since we pulled out of honoring the Paris Peace Accords under the former president, even if we did this, it still would only catch us up to a portion of the plan that we had initially submitted. I think it's a bold move by President Biden to really show the rest of the world we want to rejoin and work hard on these international issues.
I think you're right. And it's also an area where there can be common ground between adversaries, certainly Russia and China. We all care about the planet, you know, whatever our other differences are in the political, geopolitical sphere. And I think it's a way, perhaps, to have a rapprochement with both Xi and Putin, our two adversaries. And, there's growing concern about what Putin's up to in Ukraine with a massive amount of soldiers and jet fighters parked right near the border. There's great concern that a showdown is coming. And let's hope that perhaps that part of the Biden foreign policy is by focusing on issues like immigration, the environment, that there's a way to find common ground between all countries in the world. And I think that's part of his plan, is that there's a way to talk about some issues. And once you're starting to talk in concert about issues like the environment and global warming, maybe there's a way then to take down the temperature of what now seems to be a very hot situation with Putin and Ukraine and Xi and China threatening Taiwan and the Straits there. So there's a lot going on in the foreign policy area that we haven't paid much attention to, but we probably should.
And don't you think that we really have to, people always talk, we've got to start learning to talk Republicans and Democrats in Congress and the House. I think it's more important for us to reestablish ourselves, first of all, in the world and open up those lines of communication again, honest lines of communication, not Twitters, but with other countries. Then once we get that established, then the second part of it is we have to show to everybody else that as a government, we can get along with ourselves and do the same things in our own country.
Right. We saw the Chinese criticize us. Like, who is the United States to criticize others for democracy with what's happened here? So it looks to me like we're digging out of a very deep hole that was dug there by the previous administration. America first meant America alone. And we can't really solve a lot of these problems alone. And we're not going to defend the world alone either.
Yeah, it's an interesting situation. And one final note here, which I don't think people realize, when we talk about, I want to go back to the Suez Canal and the ship getting stuck there. Do you realize that there's a great story that the BBC had put out? There is a program they have for captains of ships, that these tankers. It is a replica waterway. It's part of what they call the Port Revel Training Facility, where mariners can go and train and practice to navigate the Suez Canal and other canals.
That's amazing. Yeah. Certainly the captain of that ship needed some practice, I guess, although high winds played a role, and it is a narrow passageway, as we've seen, and at least that there's a choke point there. Fascinating. You know, it was a reminder of how dependent we are on trade and goods moving around the world through ships and elsewhere and other means. We are all pretty well connected in this world, and the notion that we could do anything alone or by ourselves, you know, just it's folly. And glad to see a foreign policy that recognizes partnerships with our countries.
All right, Brian, it's always great to check with you, and now that this trial
is
over.
Absolutely, and I hope you survived the storm okay. I heard from some of my friends up there that it was pretty rough.
It was pretty rough. The second half of the tree didn't come down yet, but hopefully, these tree people are so busy, hopefully it'll come down before the next storm rolls through.
Yeah, and good buddies at Applewood are working overtime, I'm sure, this morning.
Absolutely. All right, Brian, we'll speak to you next week.
Take care,
Marshall. Take care. Brian Ross with Real News here on Robinhood Radio. You can also find Brian's show on demand, robinhoodradio.com. Click on demand. Click on Real News with Brian Ross.